It's comedy at the Carlson Cast with your delightful host, Vinny Paulino.
It's true.
Your murderous co-host, Brian Ball.
I hope not.
And I'm your incredibly porous producer, Nick Levasseur. And today we've got Ryan Hamilton. Let's send it over to the studio with your host, Vinny Paulino.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for watching the comedy at the Carlson Cast. I'm going to turn this music down here. Ba-boom. It's another beautiful morning inside of the greatest comedy club in the world. I want to thank you for tuning in live on Facebook. Some of you are watching us on YouTube. And some of you are listening to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. We appreciate you keeping tracks and make sure you subscribe.
Yep.
Subscribe.
Yep. That's there a word. There you go. You got it. You got there.
Okay, maybe I
Good
didn't earn
job.
Your subscription click on that one.
He's trying out for Adult Bill in the It remake. So
He's been practicing all week.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I'm the worst. But, Method. You know, you could just write it in the review you leave us next to the 5 stars. Brian Ball's here today, everybody.
Hey, it's me.
Nick Levasseur's here.
Yep.
I talked right over Brian to say hi to Nick.
I know. That's fair.
I get that. I do that a lot, too.
So you talk over me to say hi to yourself?
Uh-huh.
Oh,
all right.
Okay.
Well, this is going swimmingly. I want to say I think our next comedian that's coming in today is going to be one of those guys that we don't get in here again.
Yeah, he's kind of taken off.
He's kind
yeah.
of
he's got a Netflix special. That's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
He's on what you would call an upward trajectory.
He's one of those guys you read his credits and you're like, how did we pull that off?
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And if you're wondering how we pulled that off.
A lot of people.
A lot of open mouthed.
They weren't into it, but he did it anyway.
That's how we get them to do it. Just like, stop.
Yeah,
get them off
of
us.
We'll make the furry one stop.
And it's feathered.
Oh yeah, you're right. The feathered one.
I love it. You look like you look like Jerry Lee Lewis's nephew that couldn't be in the band with hair like that. So let's talk about Ryan Hamilton before he gets in here today. This guy, like you said, Nick, he's got a Netflix special, Happy Face. He was also named one of Rolling Stone's top 5 comics to watch.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big deal.
I was number 6, so I just didn't make the list.
That's a lie.
Well, that's just blatant lies.
I don't know that I wasn't number 6 because they don't tell number 6.
They do. It wasn't you.
It was not you. It was definitely not you.
Okay.
This is embarrassing, folks. I apologize. I just apologize for this kind. We don't condone lying to our audiences like this. And
you deserve better, the internet.
I should throw this coffee in your face, you liar. So we're going to have him in here, and we're going to talk to him. And I got to say, the guy's toured with Drew Carey, Jerry Seinfeld. He's been around, and he's seen some stuff, and he's got a very interesting backstory. So we're looking forward to having him in. And I want to remind you all that are tuning in live that the text line is open. You can text your questions 585-484-0265.
Very good, Nick.
Very good, Nicholas.
Excellent fingering, Nick.
I'll take that back.
Oh, you tease. He blew a kiss and then he sucked it back in.
The little cheeky monkey.
He's just adorable. He's a real problem, though. I got to be honest with you. He's a real problem, ladies and gentlemen.
All those fires out back. I can't help myself. There's a darkness inside of me I can't control.
And that the firelight just makes it go away for just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
So, warm opening, warm intro. I feel great about this show so far. It's early. We're just drinking our coffee. So, what do you say we jump into our sponsors right before Ryan gets in here in a few minutes?
I say hurrah.
Hurrah. Huzzah. And let's say our favorite word in Italian, sapori.
Flavore.
That's not the right noise. Greater Rochester's finest, all events caterer, providing professional service and gourmet cuisine for your next celebration. Not only that, you could have lunch inside the Powers Building atrium. Chef Joe has some mighty delicious grub down there.
He does.
That's true.
You could have them cater your very own special event.
It's crazy.
It's very simple. Find them on Facebook. Find them on Instagram at Sapori Rochester. And make all of your food dreams come true.
And occasionally you can get a panini with Vinny's name on it.
And that's true. And I will throw a shout out to my friend Chris Lindstrom, who just released this morning the newest episode of his show, Food About Town, featuring me and Chef Joe.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we sat down and had some... I'm going to break this thing with a hammer.
Do it.
I'm not really going to.
Do it on Facebook Live.
No! I will not be peer pressured by you.
Break your phone!
Those videos get a lot of clicks.
Yeah, they do.
Just the breaking expensive
yeah,
things.
Yeah, dude, come on. We need the clicks, dude. I need that click money.
Do it for us.
Do it. Do it for me. Look how sad I am.
First off, if you think your sadness is incentive to like help me turn it around for you, your sadness is like a delicious Sapori Vinnie Paulino pizza panini to me.
Wow.
I'll eat it all up.
Wow. Way to turn that into a promo. Really
Segway.
Good. Nice.
I'm a pro, baby.
That was good.
When it comes to food. So, yeah, you can check out that new episode. It's called Food About Town. I believe it's on iTunes and all the usual places that podcasts are born. Talked a lot about the Rochester show on there. He had a lot of questions about the Rochester show.
Oh, the old travesty?
I said, it's best to leave some things in the past. coming up, Three Heads Brewing, baby.
Woo, woo.
Love Three Heads. What am I doing here?
Zoom that in.
Let me tell you something. This is getting crazy and kooky today.
Crazy bubbles.
We're unzooming and wow.
Ooh, it's a touch screen.
That's kind of what life looks like once you have seven or eight of those.
Yes, you just see a big
zoom in and out.
Glowing green disc.
Yeah.
That isn't the aliens. Delicious beer. Delicious beer. Good people. Three Heads Brewing. Check out the brewery on Atlantic Avenue in the good old Rochester, New York. Or look around the supermarket to find yourself some in the wherever beer is sold. It's delish.
It is. I would go as far as scrumptious.
Ah, you would.
Yes.
Now, hold on. God darn it. Consarn it.
You can do it. I've got faith in you.
I have no faith in me right now.
Rufio. Rufio.
Bang-a-rang. There we go.
I'm a mess today. Handcrafted in upstate New York, our other great sponsor, Iron Smoke Whiskey. Available in two varieties, Applewood Smoke Whiskey and Rattlesnake Rosie's Apple Pie Whiskey. It's like Thanksgiving in a glass when you get some of that Rattlesnake Rosie's.
Except the racist comments and arguments about your aunt.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what you do on Thanksgiving.
I'm Irish.
Okay. That makes sense. IronSmokeWhiskey.com, and they have their brand new tasting room out there in Fairport. For more information on that, like I said, IronSmokeWhiskey.com. We're going to be back in just a few minutes after these words to let you know what's going on and coming up here at Comedy at the Carlson. And when we return, the great Ryan Hamilton will be in. So make sure you send your texts and your questions now or forever hold your peace. Be right back. Hey folks, coming up this summer at Comedy at the Carlson, we have some amazingly cool shows. You may have just seen his Netflix Hour. Mr. Ryan Hamilton will be here this weekend. Next weekend, we have Thea Vidal, July 27th and 28th. We have Greg Fitzsimmons, August 3rd and 4th. And don't forget Rich Voss, August 9th and through 11th. We're going to be glad to have him back to harass Brian. Adele Gibbons will be here August 16th through the 18th. Marlon Wayans, August 23rd through 25th. We're excited about that. Robert Powell III, August 30th through September 1st. Gary Gulman, September 6th through the 8th. Gilbert Gottfried, September 14th and 15th. Jeremy Piven, September 21st and 22nd. You get your tickets to this and any of these other shows that you've seen here today by visiting carlsoncomedy.com or call 585-4-COMEDY. Hope to see you at a show sometime soon. Oh, look, we are back. And now I have headroom. This
there
is
you
great.
Go.
Welcome back to the Comedy at the Carlson cast, everybody. Joining us in studio today, he's been named one of Rolling Stone's top five comedians to watch. He has his recent Netflix special just hit not too long ago, Happy Face, which was fantastic. I watched it this week. You could watch it yourself, and you may have seen him on some of the great late-night shows. The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, Conan, and The Late Late Show. In studio with us, Brian, get the applause ready, Ryan Hamilton.
There we go.
Who has the appropriate use of a Y in his first name, unlike you, Brian.
No, it's the proper way to spell it.
Nope. He spells Brian with a Y, so it's
with
like
a Y. I've seen it done.
Yep.
I've seen it done.
It's the Scottish way.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's the dumb way. It's Buh Ryan. Is what his name is.
You don't see a lot of Ryans with an I. That's not happening.
No, I think girl Ryans sometimes. I see it with an I.
Yeah. Is that also Scottish?
Yeah. I don't know.
Oh,
but yeah. I get Ryan a lot. People just assume. I say with a Y and they drop the B.
Yeah, I get Brian a lot. It depends. They're just going to hear one, and whichever one they know, that they just go with that one.
I get brain a lot, too. You probably don't get that.
Brain, I don't get.
No. This is riveting. I'm
just going
to
disagree.
To anyone not named Ryan or Brian.
Listen, there are a lot of people in the world named Ryan or Brian. There's a core audience out there. It's niche, but if we can reach them, they're going to be loyal.
And they don't know the struggle we go through on a day-to-day basis. They have no idea.
I feel like it needs to be stated for the record that no one has ever called him Brain. That's just me. I'm just saying.
It's been written.
Okay.
It's been written.
Whatever you say.
YouTube comments.
We'll get past this, and I'm sorry for taking us down this road.
It's all my fault.
Really, we have a real guest in studio, probably the first and last time we'll ever see Ryan Hamilton in here. But we're glad to have you, man.
Thank you. I appreciate
Things
it.
Things are definitely on the uptake. I got to watch your show and be a part of it last night.
Yeah,
and,
it was a great show, right? Really fun.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Loved it. I sat in the back and laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed. Four more shows this weekend.
The show overall was great. The audience was fantastic. Yeah. They were awesome. Yeah, it was really fun. Yeah.
The opener was awesome.
I want a guest to come in when one of us is on the show and be like, he sucked. Just like right in front of both of us.
Well, Rich Voss is coming in, and I'm sure he'll have a wonderful review of you in a couple of weeks.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, Ryan Hamilton, you grew up in Idaho.
Idaho.
Which is a strange place for a stand-up comedian to come from.
Everybody tells me that. Everybody says, but comedians come from anywhere, I think. But yeah, people say, I never met anyone from Idaho, much less a comedian. How did this happen?
Would you say that people from Idaho tend to just stay in Idaho?
I guess. There aren't a lot of us is the thing. The entire state is a million people, the whole state.
Oh, wow.
Boise, the biggest city, is about 300,000 people, which I think is probably comparable to
Rochester. The size of here,
We're about a million, man. State. We got a million.
Do you?
Yeah.
In the greater Rochester area.
Oh, in the greater Rochester. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Boise, I don't know now, is maybe in the whole area, it's a half a million, but the whole state's a million people. The next largest city from Boise is 75,000 people. So it goes from like 3 to 500,000 to 75,000. And then it's like 50,000, and then it's like 30,000, and then it's like a lot of rural towns.
Wow.
So that's what Idaho is.
Now, and how close to Boise did you grow up?
6 hours. Long ways.
Yeah, I can see why people never leave. Like, it just takes a long time to get to the airport. Just seems like, oh, that's a hassle.
We you know, I'm from one of those towns that you drive 30 minutes to get to go to a movie or to go shopping. We go an hour to get to the mall. To like, if you're going to buy your school clothes, you would drove to the mall.
Word of Amazon hasn't traveled there yet.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this was when I was growing up a long time ago. So now Amazon's changed people, but. When I was young, my grandfather had a store, and it was a variety store, and it was the store in town where you could buy everything.
A general store, as they would say.
Yes, clothes, toys, everything was there. But that closed when I was like 14 or 15, you know, like a Walmart came in. And not like a Walmart came in 30 miles away. But that's where I grew up, and not close to any sort of entertainment or a comedy club. The nearest comedy club had to be Salt Lake City, which was 4.5 hours away.
Wow.
And but I loved comedy. I just loved watching comedy.
So were you watching the late night shows?
I was watching the late night shows, and actually I was watching a lot of A&E's Evening at the Improv.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
I made my family watch that every week, and I loved it. And when there was a comedian on late night, my parents would get me out of bed if someone was on the Tonight Show. They thought he would love to see this. They would wake and pull me out because they knew. For whatever, I don't know why I was so drawn to it, but earlier, it wasn't always stand-up. It was, I was really into the Far Side cartoons, Gary Larson.
Gary Larson, all day.
Yes, I loved it. It was something quirky about it, And there was a lot of nature in it, which I'm from nature, so it was interesting to me, and I related to it. And I also read the Dave Barry column every in the Sunday paper.
You read Dave Barry? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, how old were you at this point?
This was probably 10, 12. We kind of read it as a family. I remember it sitting there on Sunday. There would be a paper with the Dave Barry column, and we would talk about the jokes in the Dave Barry column. Yeah. And I wanted to be Dave Barry. I wanted to be a humor columnist when I was 10, 12, 14, 16. That was my dream job. And I called the newspaper, the county paper, when I was 14 years old, and I said, can I have a column? Because we didn't have a school newspaper.
Can I have Dave Barry's slot?
Yeah. Yeah. And they gave me a column. So I I got 10 bucks a week, and I was writing a column about what was going on in school every
week. Did it have a fun name?
Yes, it was called, well, I had two, actually. So after that, that was the county newspaper, and then we had a local weekly paper, very small, and they called and said, we want one, too. So I was writing two columns a week.
You were in demand.
Yes.
Wow.
And the first one was called Husky Paws, which our mascot was a husky. And I did a pun, a play on words. It was P-A-U-S-E.
Okay.
Husky. I'm not saying it was not great, but that's what I did.
Stop right there, Husky.
Yes, exactly. So, and that's kind of how I got into comedy, but I was always thinking about comedy for some reason.
Now, it's very interesting that your parents picked up on how much you liked it, that they would wake you up in the middle of the night.
My parents would never do that.
My parents would try to put me to bed early.
Thank God he's asleep.
Right.
Leave him there.
So they must have liked you. That's weird. What's it like that your parents have liked you?
What does love feel like?
Tell us everything.
My family's great. They're very supportive, but we're not a typical family from the town I grew up in. My mother's family goes way, way back there, but we were one of the only families that weren't farmers. Okay. So we had the store, but most everybody are farm kids.
Were you like the aristocrats because you didn't have to like get in the dirt?
I do feel a little bit like all my friends were working in the summer what we called moving pipe, which is the farms are all irrigated there, so you have these 6-inch aluminum pipes that you have to pick up, and they're like 100 feet long, and you move them across the fields. That's where all my friends, that was their summer job. My mom was on the board of the swimming pool, so I was a lifeguard at the pool. I had the best job in town.
This kid.
So I was a little bit
right,
like
newspaper columns, hanging out at the pool.
Exactly. So I had the good job. We were different. But my parents were very creative people. My mom studied writing and was a teacher. My dad studied art education.
Wow.
And so they were creative. So I think they liked that I had some creative aspirations.
They recognized it and nourished it.
Yeah.
That's not a common story I hear from a lot of stand-ups.
I mean, to be honest, they were, you know, they weren't thrilled with me driving around the country doing these awful gigs and things like that. And college was important, and they wanted me to get a steady job. All those things that comics often go through with their family, I had all those. But they were supportive and creative, and I think they loved that I was doing something creative.
They didn't think it was a completely insane thing to do.
No, no. They thought, I think if I hadn't gone to college and graduated from college, me trying to pursue comedy would have been more of an issue.
Okay.
I think their idea was like, well, he can always go back and get a job. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
So let's clean up this timeline real quick. Now, you graduated college, then you pursued stand-up, or were you doing stand-up before that?
I did it a couple of times in college. I was studying journalism. Like, you know, I had the column and everything, and I got into writing, and that's what I was
Were you still writing Husky Paws from college?
Well, the local NBC affiliate called me when I had and they said,
this guy.
They said, we hear you're interested in journalism. This was when I was like 15 years old. And in Idaho, you can drive when you're 14. You get your driver's license when you're 14 because of all the farm kids.
Yeah,
they all need to be able to drive. So they said, would you like to learn how to shoot high school sports for us? And I said, sure. So they gave me a little Hi-8 camera, and they would assign me every Friday night to go shoot a couple of games somewhere, and then I would drive an hour to the NBC affiliate, and they taught me how to edit on reel-to-reel, the old mark-in, mark-out, the machines, tape-to-tape, and we would write jokes. the guy who was the sportscaster wanted to, he was a funny guy, as sports guys often are, and we tried to make the sportscast funny. So I would go shoot a couple of games, he would go out shoot a couple of games, we'd come back, and high school sports was king, you know? That was it. That was the big coverage. So we would...
Not a lot of pro teams in Idaho.
No, there's nothing. So that was it, and that was... We tried to put some highlights together and make it funny, and I would get a joke on the air every once in a while, and that was huge to me. And so I started, that was another thing. It was just kind of, I had this weird comedy mixed with journalism thing going on, and I was studying broadcast journalism in college, and I had a little radio show, and some of us were interested in comedy, and we decided as a remote for our radio show, we would do a stand-up comedy show, and that was the first time I ever did stand-up. At a pizza place, this show that we produced ourselves for our radio station. And I did that a few times, but I wasn't pursuing it as a career. It was just an interest. I was going to be a journalist, and then I switched to public relations eventually, and that was going to be my career.
Interesting.
I think in a lot of ways, those small town radio stations and TV stations are a great way to do stuff like that because they just want whatever they like. I worked at small town radio too. Like they just want whatever they can get.
Yeah,
and you'll
sure.
just suggest an idea, and they're like, "Yeah, sure, give it a shot. Let's see what happens."
Brian Ball over here, huge in Hornell, New York.
That was huge in Hornell, New York. Yeah,
huge.
It's a
Saturdays
thing that kind of doesn't exist like that anymore. I don't.
You'd be surprised it does. You just don't go out there anymore.
I guess so. Maybe. I'm scared that it'll go away, but I like that world. I like that there's a guy who knows what's going on locally, and he's talking to people locally. This was just a student show. It was just a student radio show. We all had our own show. Yeah. But I always had jobs somewhere in journalism. I was writing on papers before I was studying, and I had little jobs in PR and stuff. Always through college, I was doing that. I ran a little local. I transferred eventually. I went to school in Utah, and I ran a little cable access news channel, the government, that would post the what's going on in the community. That was my college job. I ran that little
channel. You had to play all the little that music over.
And I would program the
slideshow,
the city council meetings. You know, I had my own little camera set up so we could produce the show. I'd take different angles and
so production.
Yeah, I was
writing
doing a lot of stuff like that.
Wow.
Yeah, it was. And I, but I always just, I didn't really, I don't know, I thought, I didn't think about it as a career, but I was always writing down jokes, and I was always too busy. I always had a job, and then I graduated from college, and I wasn't in school anymore. I had a job, a part-time job, but I was looking for a real job.
Right.
And I remember I finished my final, and I was done with college. I was like, okay, I don't have any more college work to do. And I called the comedy club that day. And I said, can I get a set? And they said, sure. And I went down and I did a set like 3 days after I finished my last final. And then I was just doing comedy for fun. And
so that blows my mind, like how nice they must be in Utah.
I know.
Yes.
I know.
That is something that wouldn't really happen now either.
I'm going to advise anybody watching this live right now not to call the club and say, can I have a set?
Yeah. I know. It was
weird. Ain't going to go well.
The results will not be the same.
It was weird. I don't know why they did it. I think... The club, for whatever reason, was maybe kind of struggling at that time, and they just were like, whatever, you know.
Come on down.
Yeah, just we'll give you 3 minutes. They didn't have an open mic. They probably needed, like, a host or something.
Right.
So they're like, okay, here's a guy who's interested. I hit him at the right time or something. But that club was only open for, like, maybe 8 months after that.
Interesting.
Yeah. Right, because they're just giving out spots all willy-nilly.
Yeah, exactly.
nice to meet you. Thank you for your interest. You're headlining tonight. Yeah. Come on in. Come on up. Like, it's amazing to me how many different aspects of production and media that you've actually been involved in. I mean, that's got to give you a real appreciation for the actual business side of comedy and those types of things as well.
Yeah, it's funny. I should be really good at that stuff. I studied public relations, and then my real job, I had a real job at an ad agency for a year. I was working as an ad agency doing publicity. And I don't know. Now I just... I've been away from it for so long, and things change. I still follow it. I'm still fascinated by...
Right.
I loved studying the stuff. I think I loved studying the concepts more than I loved practicing it.
Right, yeah. right.
The idea of how behavior changes through media and how people are influenced and things. The whole science behind it.
You like the theory of it.
Yes, I love it. It's interesting for me to think about, and I like all of that. But I'm glad I'm doing what I'm doing now. And now, every social media and things. And to be honest, I was telling you yesterday, Ben, I don't do a lot of podcasts. Yeah. I don't like. I'm a very pretty private person, sure. So I don't go into a lot of stuff. And the long form podcast is a thing that just gives me anxiety for some reason.
Do you feel nervous right now?
A little bit, because really? I don't do this a lot. Okay. I don't do these things a lot. I'm very comfortable doing comedy on stage, but I don't do a lot of these sort of things. I don't know why. I'm only nervous now because I've started to say no to so many, and so when I do one, I'm like, well, I'm doing one, but I said no to all these others.
Well,
so
let me tell you something. Those other ones...
and no one watches this, so no one will know that you did it. It'll be our little secret.
How dare you, sir? It'll be our little secret. How dare you, sir? How dare you? That is not true at all.
People can make you think whatever they want when they're trying to get you to do an interview. No one's going to hear it. It's fine. Just do it. It's good. We need to, why not do it? People, it might help the show. It's like there's always a reason to do it. And I just realized that I like, I don't know. I always walked away never feeling like I'm really glad that I did that most of the time. So well, I just started going, well, maybe I'm going to take a break. So that's I'm in like break mode now.
So let's change Ryan's mind about that. If you are on the fence about coming to see him this weekend, there are four more shows. You get your tickets at 585. For comedy, or you can visit us at comedyatthecarlson.com or carlsoncomedy.com and get your tickets right this very second. So buy some and make him feel good about doing this, please, for the love of God.
Yeah.
What's the matter with you people?
The Come future to the show. Of his podcast career hangs in the balance.
Don't you want a Ryan Hamilton
That's
podcast?
Right. Yeah.
They're still asking people from know. Idaho are calling him right now, asking him to do a podcast.
Can you do a podcast about those Huskies?
I don't know. I like... I couldn't imagine doing a podcast. I don't know what
If you
be.
Did, please call it Husky Paws. Please do it. I'm begging you
With
right
no
now.
With no explanation
just
whatsoever.
Just don't explain it. I just really felt that my column needed to be immortalized in this way. Yeah. So, and I get that, man. I feel like the market is oversaturated with podcasts. Our idea and our concept here is really just to highlight what Comedy at the Carlson's doing. And
right. I think that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little
when
different.
When I found out what you guys are doing, I'm like, well, this is more along the lines of press to help move tickets. And I like that. I'm trying to help the show. If I can help the show, then I'll
And it's, it's pretty rare you have one from the actual club that's in the club.
This is beautiful. Yeah, it's nice.
So, like... 8 months, the comedy club you're working at closes.
Right.
Gone.
There was a new club that's still there, which I really consider my home club, called Wise Guys in Salt Lake City. And I met the guy who, my friend Keith Stubbs, the guy. He's a very funny comedian, and he owns the club also. But he was doing comedy at this club that I started hanging out. After I did that set, I was just there all the time hanging out.
And that's what one does when they do all right a comedy. It gets in your blood.
Yeah. That's what happens, right? You're just... Although, I don't know. I don't see comics hanging out at the club that much anymore when I'm on the road. I don't know. But when I was starting, I would come in every weekend. I watched every headliner, one show at least. I would come in and be like, I'm going to sit in the back of the room, and I watched every week. But I met my friend Keith Stubbs, who was just getting ready to open a club.
Mm-hmm.
In a different market. And so I was like hanging out at the club before it was open. I was, you know, helping them, you know, open the club and just hanging out. So I was always around it. And that's my home club, I guess, is how we got on that. But
So like, how did you end up in New York? At what point did you decide I got to go to New York City?
It was a long time. I mean, I'd been doing comedy for a while. Eventually I lost my job at the ad agency.
Okay.
I got laid off. Although it was a difficult job for me. It was like my dream job. I worked really hard to get into this ad agency. But a year in, I was kind of disillusioned, and I was feeling more like a cold call salesman than I was practicing these theories that I'd studied in college and doing these creative campaigns. Although they were a very creative agency, it just was the
a lot of sales.
Work I was doing was like, pitching clients that I wasn't real passionate about to try to get press that I didn't really... I just didn't have the passion for it, I guess.
Yeah, you're selling mattresses.
Exactly.
Not doing
That's kind of what it felt like.
Yeah, cool campaigns.
Yeah. So I got laid off, but I kind of got fired.
Okay.
But they gave me a nice severance package, and I'm still friends with all of them, by the way. My old boss, we have dinner when he's in New York, and I'm friends with all of them. It just wasn't the right fit for me. It's right. Interesting how life sometimes just goes, no, but it's not a personal reason. It's just like, this is not where you're supposed right. to be.
Yeah. Sometimes you leave a yeah. job swearing. Sometimes you leave a job going, fair enough.
Right. Was, yeah. It wasn't. So I have great relationships and fond memories. But I left and or whatever. We parted ways. And then I was looking for another job. But I was doing comedy for fun at that time. Right. My whole job was to become a local MC. And I thought, that'll just be it. And I started doing more comedy. I got a job as a parking valet. And then I took... someone offered me a road gig because somebody canceled these terrible, awful road gigs. There were bars in
Montana. I can only imagine that they're really in the middle of nowhere when you're going out in that part of the world.
Yeah. There are these comedy runs that still exist. A lot of them are called Tribble Runs. The guy who books them, Dave Tribble, maybe you've heard of him.
Oh, his reputation has preceded him.
Yeah. So... they're still around, and, you know, it is what it is. Dave's a great guy. He booked me for years. But the rooms are rough often. They're sure. just tough. And so I was doing these tough rooms, and I just started doing them. I just thought, okay. There's kind of this romantic notion, like, wow, this is interesting. I'm driving 6 hours to a gig. I feel like I'm a touring artist of some sort. This is interesting. And then I just started doing more, and then I thought, I'm just going to try comedy for a year and see what happens.
Sure.
And then I moved to Seattle, and I was there for a year, and then I was just doing it. I was all in at that point. And then I go, let's try another year, and I won this competition, and I got some interest in L.A., and I got a manager, and I started auditioning for a couple things, and then I started doing it more and more, and I got a couple TV things, and then my first TV spot was Live at Gotham on Comedy Central. And I've never been to New York, and I went there, and I did this set. I was the first one on the show, and Andy Kindler was the host.
Right.
And I was nervous. I didn't know how to work in New York. It's a different thing. And the set went well, and then Amy Schumer, it was also her first TV spot.
Wow.
I didn't know her, but she came up to me, and she said, nobody knew Amy at that time.
Right.
And she said, you're moving here, and we're going to get a place. That was the first thing she said to me after I got off stage.
You're kidding.
No. Wow. And I said, what? Who are you? We're going to get a place? What is this? And she goes, I just think you should be here. And a year later, I moved there. And
wow.
She looked out for me. She helped me out. And she'd been there, you know, she was probably 6 years in New York at that time or something like that.
Right.
And then we did Last Comic Standing a few months later together. Yeah, and I moved. I just had some friends there. I was intrigued by the city, and I thought, if I don't move to New York right now, I probably will never have a New York experience in my life. Because I always kind of thought, eventually maybe I'll end up in L.A.
Right.
And now I'm in New York. 4 years in, I was hating it, and I was struggling, ready to move. I wasn't getting on stage much. And a couple of years after that, it all changed. And now I love New York, and I don't want to be anywhere else.
Well, when things are going good, New York is great.
It's the best, right? Yes.
Yeah.
But when it's hard, it's hard.
It's very hard.
Yeah, you're right. And so I saw both sides of it. And I'm really glad that I'm there. Yeah.
So you know, I guess my question is about your style of comedy.
Uh-huh.
You know, you're very smart comedy, very... I hate to use the term observational because it always feels like...
Yeah, it's a hard to find a term, but I think it's...
It's observational from your point of view. Everything is obviously from, you know, this is my upbringing, and it goes into this is who I am as a person and how I react to the outside world around me, which I think is obviously the most honest kind of comedy because it's all about your experiences.
Yeah.
So when you were starting out and having to do Tribble Runs and going to bars, how did that style... Did that work for you? Did it not work
for
you?
That's a good question, because it was integral to how I started my comedy career. Because my style has changed a lot. Like, if you saw me in the beginning, you would think, this guy's trying to be Mitch Hedberg. I loved Hedberg.
No fooling.
Yeah.
We do a lot of one-liners kind of thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was, like, standing there in, you know, trying to be real obscure and weird.
It
was weird kind of stuff. And
almost daring the crowd to laugh at it.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
But I loved Hedberg, and he was actually the first comic I saw live too, before I even started doing comedy. But so my style has changed, but I always the tone of the comedy has been the same from the beginning. I've always been clean, and I've always been observational in that way.
So since day one, you worked.
Yeah, yeah. It just kind of came out that way for me. The style changed a lot,
yeah.
But that has always remained the same. So when I was doing these gigs, to get to your question, I thought, my thinking was, if I can do a joke that I like, that's observational, broad, it's probably a clean joke, then, and if I could get it to work in these rooms, then I know it's a good joke. That's all I did. So I was like,
it's literally one of the most tried and true formulas there is to getting good at comedy. What you just said is 1,000% correct.
Yeah.
Take the challenging rooms, and if you make it work there, then it works anywhere. Yeah.
Because there's another way you can go in those rooms, and I saw a lot of people try to get good at those rooms.
Yeah.
And I think that's a mistake. Yeah, I mean, you can learn things to a certain point in those rooms, a couple of years in those rooms. After that, if you start to get really, really good at those rooms, then I think something's wrong. Because they're different. They're a different thing.
It's a different environment than a club.
Yeah.
You know, I thought, because you do very smart jokes, and what I found working at those rooms is, if you can work those rooms and do smart material without sounding condescending,
yes,
then that's a real skill to have, that you can be smart and not sound arrogant.
Right, yeah. I mean, what happened was, I did so many of those rooms. I mean, I made a living off of featuring in those rooms, which is not a good living. But, I had very few living expenses.
Technically a living.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was doing those rooms, and I did a lot of them, and as a middle. And what happened is, when I started working the clubs and was able to get some club work, it's like...
night and day.
You're like... oh, I can destroy here.
Yeah,
this is like a cakewalk for me.
Yeah,
because it's like swinging the bat with, putting weight on the bat to swing in batting practice. When you get the regular bat, you're like, I can knock this out of the park. So I learned that for some reason I kind of latched onto that idea. Like, that's going to be how I'm going to use these rooms. And I never even got good at headlining those rooms. I headlined them a couple times. But my goal was to get out of those rooms as soon as possible. I didn't want to get good at them, really.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, the styles there, obviously, they're a little bit of a clash here. You've got the style that you have now is marvelous, by the way.
Like,
where you are, and the way that you write, and the way that you can tell a story.
Oh,
I love
thanks.
It. I very much enjoy it.
Thank you.
I thoroughly enjoy it, and I don't usually say that to everybody.
Thanks.
A lot of times I just say,
smiling and nodding.
Smiling and nodding. Oh, that's great. Thanks for coming. Like, I do that a lot. But I dig it, man.
Thanks,
I really dig it.
I really appreciate that.
Like, when you write, though, when you actually start writing the kind of material that you do, like, I don't want to pull anything from your Netflix special, or I don't want to, like, give anything away. You should watch it. But there was one joke that I absolutely loved. And it was just, like, a one-liner, and I wanted to tell you how much it made me laugh. Was that you were talking about being in New York City and looking over and seeing somebody, and they went, like that to you.
Oh,
and
you're
like, where I'm from, that means, how's your crops?
Yes.
And that made me laugh so hard, because it's just such a perfect marriage of who I am to the observationalist.
Yeah.
And I think that's just beautiful.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, that joke actually, it comes from where I'm from. People just, they do this one finger wave on the steering wheel, because you're on these long country roads, and you don't, if you see a car, it's probably someone that you know. You may not recognize the car, but it's probably someone that you know. So everybody just kind of feels obligated to go, just do this.
Yeah.
So there's always this little wave.
An acknowledgement.
Yes. So that's what I was thinking of in the joke. It wasn't really like a nod, per se, but it was a wave in the car. But it translates the same. It's the same thing.
Right.
But that's where that joke came from.
And you could just tell when you watch your special or listen to you and watch you live, you are a very authentic person. You just are who you are, man.
Yeah,
you really are.
Oh, I try. I don't know.
Not a lot of pretense.
Yeah. I'm not revealing a lot of personal information in my set. So I sometimes wonder if people think that I'm because there's this, it seems to me that there's this kind of like movement in comedy right now to be an open book, to be completely authentic and to expose everything that you've ever thought or done. And I think you can learn a lot about a person no matter what they're talking about.
Absolutely.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah, comedians lie. People don't. People sometimes forget that. Like, we lie a lot. Like, a lot of that stuff
and
never
pretty
happened.
Much anybody who's out there. Yeah,
I guess. But it's rooted in truth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's some kernel of truth.
I don't feel
it.
Like I'm lying because I feel like the audience kind of knows when I'm making something up.
You would think they would, but sometimes they really don't.
But people ask me all the time, did you really go skydiving? Did you really take a hot air balloon ride?
Yeah.
And yes, I did.
Right.
And my answer to them is, it's so much harder to make something up. Like, life, the hard part is, like, I didn't think, oh, I wish I could talk about hot air ballooning because that would be so funny.
Like, you got, like, your to-do list of comedy.
Yeah. It's more like everything's funny, and the job of the comedian is to find out how it's funny.
Yeah. So I can crack this hot air ballooning thing. I'll make millions.
Right. But
this is a market that's ripe for parody. Yeah.
But the thing that we make up are some of the little details are exaggerated within the thing. You know,
right.
That's what I feel like we make up. Like, I have this joke about seeing a guy wearing cat eyes on the subway, which isn't in the special. But, you know, it ends with me pulling my laser pointer out and having this guy chase around a laser pointer.
Right.
I didn't really do that, but I say that I did that in the joke. So I think the audience, they don't care if that's true or not.
I believe that every audience has a little bit of suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
They just kind of,
right.
We're just going to go with this. This is funny.
Yeah.
Because every comedian in the world has that. And by the way, to Brian's point, if there's anybody who's like, I'm 100% open book and this is me, they're full of crap. I don't ever buy it. And I immediately, it turns me off so quickly.
No. Yeah.
It just turns me off so quickly because I want the art there.
Right.
I want the art form there. Nobody is that interesting that I need to know everything about them.
Anyone who's 100% honestly open, I don't want to listen to.
Well, I don't mind.
It would be boring.
I don't mind either way. I think it's great. If you want to talk about that, that's great. As long as it's funny. I don't care.
Thank you.
Just
make
it funny. Yeah, you
gotta make it funny,
That's the thing. It's gotta be funny.
You can find a lot of humor anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, some of the greatest comics ever are exposing a lot of themselves, you know? You look at Richard Pryor, it's like, wow, he said stuff on stage that is soul-bearing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just littered with punchlines, and it's hilarious. People, you know, dying. So I think that's the thing. Whatever you're doing, it's gotta be funny. That's all.
I agree. 100%.
Yeah.
So you were saying earlier, and I had to ask you about this because you brought it up when we were talking, when we were off air, that you're obsessed with a list.
Yeah. Well, I have I don't know. I mentioned one time to my publicist that I have a list of things on my phone that are, I have so many weird little obsessions. I think we live in a world of, there's too many things to get obsessed about. Like, you can go in a deep dive on anything.
Absolutely.
And so it's a detriment at some point because you're like, well, I know so much about cast iron skillets now that I spent this whole day and week and I'm obsessed and I got to have this skillet and I got to learn how to, treat it. And so I have a list of things that I just started keeping that is like, maybe someday I'll do something with this, but my publicist really latched onto that idea, and now she's put it in these talking points, and I never know what to say about it when it comes up.
Interesting.
I can read you my list of things.
So you have a list of obsessions that you're now obsessed with.
I've never done this
obsessions.
Before, but I guess now that we're on it, I have to take this out of the list of things to talk about.
You said it.
I know. What do you mean? I said it.
You said it when we were sitting down. You were like, oh, the list of things I'm obsessed with.
He said to take it out.
I said to take it out, is what I said.
Oh! Well, I'm an idiot.
No, it's just a miscommunication.
Oh,
it's not a big deal.
You did end it with a, well, maybe.
It's no big deal.
I screwed up.
It's,
what's...
Where's my list?
If it'll make you feel better about, like, you're absolutely right. People are obsessed with, like, little things way too much. Like, this guy over here... ask him what his hobby is and what his side job is.
What's your
you
side job?
You want to plug
job?
It for your...
I review bicycles.
And what else?
Oh, I love
and,
that.
And pocket knives. I review
Do you?
Things, yeah.
I get into knives a little bit. That's one of my things.
No, we'll,
I mean,
we'll
you know a lot more
show.
About... I have this list of things that are like, I need to spend some time learning about
yeah.
this. And bikes, and not actually, bikes are another one I'm just starting to get into.
Yeah. He's into recumbent bikes.
Recumbent
though.
Bikes, I'm
which
not
is
really
on
specific
not, no one's list.
Not interested.
No, no one's list. That's fair.
How long does the flag have to be so cars don't run me over at a parking
about,
lot?
About 7 feet.
No good.
Yeah,
great.
So there's a little bit of knowledge for you to take home.
Good stuff
with you.
I think it's healthy to have those things. It's great. It's good to have something like that.
A lot of people now, though, I find, and I'm guilty of it too, like you take an obsession like that and you feel like you have to turn it into a job, though. Because everybody's got like, oh, this could be, this little obsession could be my living.
Yeah.
And it probably can't. You know? But a lot of people think that they can make it their living. And everybody's like, I'll get an Etsy channel and this will be my life now. No, probably
yeah.
not.
It's interesting because I think of it the other way. I have my career that I enjoy. But I need things to talk about. Like, I
sure.
need... To, so
yeah,
that's why
that's
that list is on there.
That's a healthy way.
Yeah, when I do these interviews, I need something interesting. Like,
yeah.
your life isn't just all comedy, is it? And sometimes I'm like, I guess it is. So I'm trying to come up with things to talk about.
Yeah.
You know,
it's all honest.
Now that
yeah.
you mention it.
Yeah.
So I have to ask you this. Couple of questions. How does Jerry Seinfeld... tap you to go touring with them? How does that happen?
Well, so I was opening for my relationship with Seinfeld is very new, by the way. I've only opened for him on the road maybe 4 or 5 times. So,
okay.
But I have, and it's been great. And I opened for him a few times in New York City, and he's amazing. He's like a wealth of knowledge, obviously, and he's a master, and it's so fun to watch him. And he's very generous, and he loves comedians, and he's so easy to talk to. And it's great, and I'm learning so much. So it's really fun. But, yes, how that happened. Do you know Gad Elmaleh?
I've heard the name.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Gad, for people who don't know, is...
Oh, Gad. Yeah, French.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, French comedian. Huge in France.
Took a second for it to
yes.
click.
Yes.
Gotcha.
He's a very big comedian in France, in Europe, and he's a movie star also.
Right.
And a stand-up comedian, but he does arenas over there. And... he and Jerry are old friends. Gad decided a few years ago that he was going to pursue a career in English in America.
Yeah.
So he's been over here for a few years working on that, touring. He has a Netflix special out right now,
mm-hmm.
and he has a Netflix show he's shooting right now, a scripted series that's actually... Well, I don't know if I'm... I shouldn't reveal the name of it, I guess. But anyway, he's... a friend of mine. He just became a friend. I didn't
wow.
know who he was, but he came over here and he was starting to do sets around, and he came up to me one night and said, I really liked your set. And I said, thanks very much. Nice to meet you. I just thought he was a fan.
Right.
And someone goes, do you know who that is? And I go, no. And he goes, that's the Seinfeld of France. They call him the Seinfeld of France a lot.
Yeah.
And I go, really? And he wasn't living here at the time. A year later, he comes back and he just like picked me out for some reason and started hanging out with me.
Okay.
Like he just goes, we should hang out. Got my number. I think we're in the same, he says we're in the same family of comedy.
I could see that.
Yeah,
he
can,
says, you know.
100%
yeah.
see that.
Yeah.
But he's great. He's hilarious and he's observant and broad like that. And, but he and Seinfeld are old friends. I don't know how they met, but they've known each other for quite a while. So Gad asked me to open for him on a little tour. Not a little tour, a big tour. I did a few dates with him on this tour. But the last date, kind of the culmination of this big tour in the States, his first tour, was Carnegie Hall.
Wow.
And he asked me to open for him at Carnegie Hall. And
you probably even heard of that back in Idaho when you were a kid. You were like...
I remember that from the television.
Exactly. I mean, I was blown away.
Wow. I mean, I'm blown away just thinking...
Yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah.
But Seinfeld was there. Seinfeld came, and he did a little walk-on kind of sketch thing in the middle of Gad's set they
uh-huh.
had planned. And so Jerry was there, and so I met him there.
Wow.
And, it was a crazy night. But Gad had me come into his dressing room where Jerry was, and he said, I just want to introduce you guys. And I remember Jerry said, have you ever played here before? I go, Carnegie.
Carnegie Hall?
Yeah. I go, Carnegie Hall?
That's funny.
And he goes, yeah. I go, yeah. And he goes, you have? And I go, no. I've never been here before. But he gave me some good advice. But it was a weird, surreal moment because I was late. I was nervous about this set already. It's Carnegie Hall.
Yeah.
Gad's audience is great, but also they don't expect me to come out.
Right.
And they want Gad to perform in French even. So when I come out and I'm performing in English, it's all there. Most of the audience is English as a second language. Not all of them, but most of them. So it's an interesting line to walk for
you'd
me.
You'd rarely be mistaken as a Frenchman.
No.
I don't think that would happen very often.
Right.
That's right. So it's not a necessarily easy spot. It was at Carnegie Hall. There's a lot of pressure on me. I was nervous. I'm meeting Jerry. As I'm meeting him, because of the time frame, they're calling my name over the thing. Like Ryan Hamilton to the wings of Carnegie Hall. And Jerry's like giving me advice and I'm just trying to ignore what's happening and listen to Jerry. And so I didn't know what was going to happen, but we talked for a few minutes. I do my set and I come off stage and Jerry's standing right there when I got off stage. And he goes, that was great. That was really great.
Wow.
I watched your whole set. And that's how I met. And then I just happened to run into him a couple of nights later at Gotham. He was coming in, and I was just walking out. I see him maybe once a year in the city. We'd never met before, but just randomly a couple nights later, he was very complimentary and just said some things that blew me away, and he was so generous, and we just kind of stayed in touch from
so
there.
So one day you get a phone call.
Yeah, just one day my manager got a call and said, Jerry's got some dates that he would love to come out. You'd come out. And the first thing we did was the Beacon Theater in New York.
Wow, that's a big one.
Yeah, but I think it was just like, before I travel and go on the road, let's see how this goes.
Do one around here.
Yeah. So we did a few at that. And but I watch every set. He writes every day, I think.
Right.
And he's always working on something. And he really takes this serious, obviously, but he does it because he loves it.
Right.
And he loves working at the level he works at. He likes performing in theaters, and he likes working on he'll work anywhere. He goes into clubs too to work on stuff, but it's great to watch his process. It's really fun.
So I guess my question for the podcast audience is, tell us all the things you hate about him now. Listen, tell us everything you hate about Jerry Seinfeld. Give us a little. No, I'm just kidding.
I can't. I mean,
there's no. I'm kidding.
It's great. He just loves comedians so much. If he was here right now, he would love this conversation because he just can talk about comedy. We talk about comedy and family. He loves to talk about family. And cars. That's what he likes to talk about.
Yeah, I've seen he does a whole show about that.
Yeah, about those things. Yes.
About all those things.
Yes.
So we'll let you get out of here, because I know you're tired and everything, and we got shows tonight. But I have one last question, and it's about comedy. And I ask this to everybody who comes through, because a lot of people who are aspiring comics watch this show.
Yeah.
Precisely because we have these types of conversations
about
comedy.
Sure.
So the question that we always ask is real simple. To anyone, do you have any advice to anybody who's thinking about stepping on stage for the first time and hasn't done it yet?
For the first time.
First time.
Yeah, it's just very simple advice. I mean, I usually tell people, I have two things that I tell people, but if it's someone who's never been on stage before, I tell them,
don't.
No. I say the lights are going to be very bright.
Okay.
It's very practical for them.
It is shocking.
Yes, it's shocking. And I've seen so many people get on stage for the first time and forget their whole set because they are distracted by the lights.
Yeah.
And they never realize that they can't see the audience and they just never put it together before. So I say, the lights are going to be bright. You're not going to be able to see the audience. Just know that. And the second thing I tell them is just open strong and close strong. Try to do that.
Beautiful. That's good advice.
I think it's just that there's not a lot for the first time. It's just very practical. But if someone who's been doing comedy a while asks me for advice, I usually say, try not to compare yourselves to other comedians, because nobody has the same path to success twice. Like, it just doesn't happen. So if somebody's getting something before you think, and you think you should be at that point, just remind yourself that it doesn't. There is no path.
Right.
The only path to success is your path. So stop comparing yourselves, because that's what eats up. It's just, it'll just eat you up from the inside. And if you let it. I think that's something that I, that's another thing I've seen in comedy that
you're
I think.
You're the first person who's ever brought up that aspect of the business.
Yeah.
And it's a very real one. And it's very interesting that you would say that, because the fact is it's very easy to get jealous and get very angry at the business.
Yeah. And you can't control that. You can't control what other people get. The only thing you can control is what you do on stage. And the other thing, if for your level of excellence, only compare yourself to what you know you're capable of doing. You know what I mean? So it's like, if you know where what you're capable of doing, only hold yourself to that level of excellence. You should be doing that, whatever that is.
Yeah, don't try and do what somebody else is doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My wife wanted to know, why is your Instagram at Ryan Hamilton?
Because my name is so common, I can't get it ever. I can't ever get my name. There's so many Ryan Hamiltons out there now. Now, like it's a new thing.
Right. Right.
It's the hot name right now.
Yeah.
Hamilton is a middle name now, too, you know?
But I can't get my name in anything. I got it on Twitter, but we actually had to go through Twitter and suspend an account that wasn't being used. And
so some guy named Ryan Hamilton one day is just like, hey.
Yeah, I guess.
My biggest anger in life is that I missed having my Twitter name be at Brian by like 3 days.
Ugh.
And some other guy got it.
Yes.
And his name was Ryan, by the way, and that's what makes it terrible.
I've always been late to social media.
He uses it just enough that I can't get it. Like, he tweets like once a year just to piss me off.
There's somebody who has RyanHamilton.com who won't sell it to me. I made him a generous offer. I don't know. They don't use it.
Hold on. Let's see what RyanHamilton.com brings up.
It's just parked, probably.
I haven't been there in a long time.
Lionsgate.
404 error.
Show the screen. This is what... Show my screen.
1 second. You moved all my buttons.
That's what comes
up. This all could be yours.
I don't know what that is.
Lionsgate. All right. Weird. Yeah. So, Ryan Hamilton, where can people find your stuff? I mean, you're obviously Netflix special, Happy Face. Yep. Watch it.
Yep. Excellent. My website is RyanHamiltonLive.com.
Great.
My Instagram is RyanHamilton, as we've mentioned, with an E at the end. And that's it. All my stuff's there.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Was this completely, did this fill you with anxiety and make you feel awful about yourself?
I will never do anything like this again.
Awesome. We got the last one, Bri. Up top.
Good. Yeah.
No, this is great. I love talking about comedy.
We ended a career.
When we're talking about comedy, it's great. No, it was fun. I really appreciate you having me.
Thank you.
We'll make you believe in podcasts again.
Make podcasts great again. Ryan Hamilton, four more shows this weekend here at Comedy at the Carlson. Get your tickets. Don't delay. Get them now. This is a family-friendly show, basically. I mean,
yeah.
It really is. I'm behaving. Ryan's behaving. We're going to behave.
Yes.
So come see us tonight.
Couple of nice boys.
Just a couple of nice, smiley gentlemen. 585-4-COMEDY for your tickets or carlsoncomedy.com. And Nick, adequate job as usual.
Oh, thanks.
Brian, yeah. We'll see you next time, everybody.
Thanks, guys.